viola track. To help us is the regularization method, which is for mathematicians very familiar. It is a standard technique to improving, for example, regularity for some complicated problem, to create a sequence of regularized problems, extract some result for them, prove that it is result uniformly bounded with respect to parameter, and then you have it. In some sense, we use this method here also, and then we, together with original primal and dual problems, we will consider two regularized problems. And delta is the corresponding parameter. So if you look at the integrand of this g delta, you see that this g is that one which is in Henke plasticity. But here you have some plus quadratic term which acts only when this modulus exceeds the critical value. Before this time, it is not necessary to regularize the model because it is quadratic anyway. But if this modulus is bigger than this critical parameter, then the original model becomes linear growth. So you append that term. And then you can simply rewrite it in such a form. Plus means positive part of the quantity. And of course, immediately there arises the dual counterpart, which also has this parameter. And now this integrand is g delta star. It is this one, and you see, but here this parameter will be in the negative power. These two problems, p delta and p delta star, they generated by this type Lagrangian, which has this term which came out of regularization. For them, we can write these relations based on superpotential principles, write this as this, this and this, and also we know that both problems are correct. It can be proved by standard method that both problems are correct, and the value of the minimizer of the primal one is exactly the same as the value of the maximizer on the dual one. So here, here you see some particular form gamma. By the way, if want to solve these problems with linear hardening within the framework of the technique which we previously discussed, so this gamma is this, and these estimates are these. It is easy to see that we have this inequality. So if I substitute some fixed function u0, then this of course holds because this is the minimizer, and this holds because if I replace in my functional delta by 1, I assume that the upper limit of all this delta is 1. And if you look at the structure of the functional, where is it? This here, yeah? So you see the bigger delta, the bigger functional. So for this reason, I have this chain of inequalities. And by this similar argumentation, I have this chain of inequalities. And from here, it follows that this guy is bounded. And of course, this also is bounded. And due to this fact, we have immediately these two boundedness. But now these constants, of course, depend on delta. Here we have this, and here we have this. Avoiding some details, which is not a matter of short lecture, I just refer to this result, that being based on these energy estimates, it is not that difficult to prove,
that this sequence of sigma delta will tend to actual sigma, to that sigma which will be in Henke model. And moreover, the difference between this sigma delta and the Henke sigma, which we are interested in, is subject to this estimate and can be computed throughout the values of the functionals. This is the first step of this analysis. So now we do as follows. We split omega into a collection of simplexes. We will assume hereafter that only Dirichlet boundary conditions are considered, that all these omega h are inside omega, and in some sense these simplicial domains constructed by union of these simplexes, they approximate omega exactly what it is written here, that the distance between any point of omega and closest point of omega h tends to zero. So now what will be the finite dimensional analog of this set QF? It will be this one. It contains tensors which I would like to outline that this set is bigger than QF, because here it contains tensors which satisfies this relation. Sorry, of course, integral is missed here. Should be integral here. Which satisfy these relations, but not for all WH, but only for these which are sitting in this W0H. So this is a weaker requirement for tau. And this guy is, as usual, in the analysis, in this analysis, is constructed by piecewise first order polynomial functions. These are these notations, just for the sake of completeness. So now we have two discrete problems generated by regularized problems. This is problem one, and this is problem two. This is defined on this space, and this is defined on this set. And now the second important result. We can say that these two problems are naturally linked in the following sense, that the values of minimizer and maximizer give the same values of the functional. Then if you know minimizer here, if you know this function, then you can compute sigma delta h, this function, by this relation. You take simply averaged values on every simplex here, where lambda is this operator generated by our nonlinear problem. This gamma here is our Henke function, function in the Henke functional. So this is an easy operation. If I have this, to compute this, it is not difficult. And then the most important thing. Then we have the following result. The difference between real Henke stress, which we are interested in, and this guy, which contains now two small parameters. One regularization, one approximation. Computed by this formula is subject to this projection estimate. You see here, this projection estimate looks much more complicated than in the standard uniformly elliptic problem. You see, we have three functionals. The first one says you that you must project your U delta, exact solution of a regularized problem, on this set. And U0 is here just to adjust boundary conditions. So this is projection in the primal space. This is something similar, but this is a projection in the dual space, and you see this projection which is here, it is uniform. So the part of the norm which is associated with traces has factor 1, But the part of the norm which is associated with deviator is this factor, delta minus 1/2. So it is some anisotropic norm. And then you have the last term, which you can call modeling error. This is the positive quantity which is generated by that how far your sigma delta is from sigma. So then now the question, how to extract rate convergence estimates from this? Yeah, and this remark is related to the third term, to this one, that it decreases monotonically. It is possible to prove that it will decrease monotonically. And this fact follows from this chain of inequalities that, of course, delta 1 of u delta 1 will be, I assume that delta 1 is bigger than delta 2. It will be bigger because delta 1 is bigger. And this will be bigger because this u delta 2 is the minimizer of this. So if I take this functional and substitute some other function than u delta 2, I will have something more. And these guys, this and this, they are due to this relation. They are exactly will be, if I substitute here r delta 1 or r delta 2. So this part will decrease monotonically. Now the main idea, how to get qualified convergence. The idea is to join these two small parameters, to relate them, associate them in some special way. And here we, on this way, we were forced to derive a special type regularity estimate, which includes this parameter delta explicitly in the estimate. Usually when you derive local or global regularity estimates, you just say that this norm is bounded from above by some constant multiplied by right-hand side or whatever. But here, since we operate with this delta, we need explicit dependence. And such type estimates were obtained under these assumptions, which are exposed here. We managed to prove that this holds true. So this is H2 norm for u delta. Of course, it is quite natural that if delta tends to zero, then this right-hand side deteriorates, because if a better estimate cannot be obtained, because if I would manage to get such type estimate with uniform bounds, then I would prove that Henke plasticity problem is regular, which is not true. So it should deteriorate, but the point is with which rate it deteriorates. And there are some explicit rates. I just show you some abridged version of this theorem. And then using this theorem and some other technical manipulations, which I avoid, it was proved the following fact, that if you take this sequence of delta such that it will be associated with the mesh size as h in the power 2 alpha, where this alpha is in this interval, and this k and beta, they are these parameters in the regularity theorem, then you can prove that this sigma delta h minus sigma is bounded, and here you have this constant h minus epsilon, and this epsilon is computed like this, plus this monotonically decreasing modeling term. What is the meaning of this estimate? Why we can say that it gives some outcome to this problem? Because to create this guy, you do not need to solve Haar-Karman problem. You do not need to construct approximations, to use some very complicated approximations which lie in the intersection of these two sets. You can use standard finite element approximations, but apply these standard finite element approximations to a regularized problem with the parameter delta. Then you compute you solve, so technically you solve, you solve this problem. When you, which can be done by standard methods, and when you will solve finite dimensional problems, you can apply, for example, the algorithm which we discussed. And then you compute this guy. And this guy is computed by algebraic, purely algebraic elementary computation. It is easy. And then the estimate says you that if you do this, and you are clever enough to adjust this delta and h in a proper way, then what you will have at the end, you will get this Henke stress tensor without operating with these complicated sets. So just to finish with a priori theory, which was very popular, which was in my counting, it is the second generation of numerical analysis, which was in 70s, 80s years. In the 80s, 90s years, there was the third one, which is called adaptive methods. In the 80s years, it was already clear that this approach has true limits, which are impossible in principle. They are inherited, inbuilt. First of all, these a priori convergence estimates, they are very general. They do not give you true information about what they are only of philosophical nature. They even can give say you that the error is monotonically decreases because they give you only upper bound of this error. And how this error behaves beneath this upper bound, nobody knows. In reality, we are interested in approximation on a particular mesh. We are interested in the accuracy of concrete approximate solution and not in the discussion about where it goes. You see how when you are on a railway station, you are interested when the train comes and whether or not the train goes from this platform. This is approximately the same difference between a priori and a posteriori approaches. And the last but not the least, that there are some a priori assumptions, like Galerkin orthogonality, higher regularity, which in practice very often impossible to verify and to be sure in, especially for nonlinear problems like in plasticity. Here, who can guarantee that you have here Galerkin approximation? It is impossible. So if to summarize, we can say that a priori convergence estimates, they are theoretical estimates which show you that your method is in principle correct and being performed on an ideal computer with infinite memory and infinite power, you will get a solution, but nothing beyond this. And this comes to, now we naturally come to the very last part of our discussion, is about a posteriori estimates. This is, of course, a special matter, and I already gave here one lecture course, maybe it was 2 years ago. Maybe next spring I will give a revised version of this course. But here, being restricted with maybe 15 minutes, we can only give a very brief overview. So what is the matter of a posteriori error estimation from the mathematical point of view? From the mathematical point of view, it means that we want to have for any functional or to some functionals where we manage to have phi, which is associated with the difference between u and v, exact and approximate solution, we want to have two-sided bounds. And these bounds, they are designated here, m minus and m plus, and they must be computable. And not only these requirements, there are also several other requirements. That they should be robust in the sense that they do not attract Galerkin orthogonality, regularity, or some other special features of the method of or technique used to get this V. Then they should be computable, which means that I can really compute these quantities. Not to
establish some qualitative properties of these estimates, but they should be indeed computable. Of course, these quantities must be continuous in the sense that if I have here a sequence which is converging in the energy space to some other element, then these guys must converge to the same. And the last thing, they should be consistent, which means that if I substitute instead of V, if I substitute such element which belongs to the kernel of this phi, here it is written in a rather general form, but if I put here norm, for example, this means that if I substitute in M plus and then minus, if I substitute instead of V exact solution, that this must be zero, both of them. The theory of we call such type inequality, we call them deviation estimates, estimates of deviations from exact solutions. The corresponding theory has been developed in the last 15 years, and now such type estimates are known for all main classes of boundary value problems. For some, it is more, this subject is more developed as elliptic problems, but for others, less, but we know how to construct them for parabolic, for hyperbolic problems. And here I will just briefly show you that you can have some presentation, how they will look like in problems like perfect plasticity. And this reflects our very latest results. Yeah, this is about the two methods which we have, variational and transformation of integral identities. There are two books, so those who are interested, they can find. Now I will try to show how to derive such type estimate on the simplified model of Henke problem. I will not operate with vector-valued functions, instead only with scalar-valued functions. So we have this variational setting where V is a scalar function, and but this G, it mimics Henke integrand. It is the same function. Quadratic inside this interval and linear outside. So the first result where from everything comes out is and I want to say that, of course, also it is natural to investigate this problem in terms of the dual problem, because in the primal problem we may not have solution. So if you want to compare U with V, then there is a question, what is U? So it, in this case, if you operate with dual problem, you do not have such a question, because this is a problem in L2, well stated, and everything is okay. So the first step is that if you compare approximation of your dual solution, which in this case will be simply gradient, it is flux in this case. This is approximation and this is this exact flux. Then you can prove this estimate, which says you that this difference is always bounded from above by I of V computed on any V from this space. So in principle, you can write infimum here. If I would have here U, if I would know that this U indeed exists, then of course I could write here U. But I do not do this because I have no guarantee that such U, which I can substitute here, and it will realize this infimum indeed exists. Therefore, we write it in such a way. And here is this dual functional. And from that one, after some manipulations, which are rather technical and not that interesting, we deduce this, another estimate, which also is about the difference between approximation of the flux and the true flux. And it says you that this estimate can be represented in this form, where this D, please recall that this is the compound functional generated by this pair of
conjugate functions. So remember, we have proved that lemma, that this functional vanishes if and only if this pair is joined by the corresponding constitutive relation, which is in our case is the model of constitutive Henke law, which is this one. So this term will vanish only if our physical law will be satisfied. And here you have this red term, which is this one. In spite of it is a bit long, the meaning of this term is quite simple. It is a certain measure of the distance from this Y star to the intersection of this K and QF. And of course, this red is the major difficulty, because we need to have some indeed computable estimate of this. We could not find it for maybe about 10 years. And because it is much more complicated than computing distances from to such sets as set of H1 or L2, it is much more complicated. And this lemma is exactly about how to measure this term. So here you have this infimum of the expression which mimics, if you look here, it mimics this D, because this D has this squared term with some factor, and then it has linear term which contains some function here, and this will be L1 function. There is one other delicate moment here, because now we operate in the pair of spaces L1 and L infinity. Yes. This guy is in L infinity. So this must be why it is such a maybe not simple form, because we must have here something which has a meaning for any function in L1. If you look here, you see that it is the case here. And so now it is mimicked by this eta, and that constant is by kappa. So you have this result that it is estimated from above by this expression, which depends on what? So this dependence of eta is in L1 is rather obvious. Of course, something like this should be. But the most interesting is this term, this r mu. This r mu is a weak norm of this equilibrium equation. So here you see how it is formally defined. It is not H minus 1 norm, because pay attention, here is L1 integral, not L2. But anyway, under the assumptions, it is easy to prove that this norm is finite. Whatever function which is in the ball, for which I have an infinity norm, is bounded, then it is clear that for L1 functions, it is bounded. And this mu is exactly the safe load parameter, which always must be bigger than 1. So, which also quite natural, that the projection on this set depends on the limit load. Why? Just imagine that I start to enlarge my forces. And if my forces are 0, then this intersection of this ball and the plane will be in the middle, because F is 0, so there will be maximum intersection, and this will be the full circle. And then I increase my force. Then my plane goes down or changes somehow, but then this intersection becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And of course, if I want to project some function on this set, it should depend on this. And this factor is here. And finally, so you see this is a result of rather fresh. We have this measurand, which contains this D. This is directly computable. This is directly computable. And the only one question which you may have here, but this is not directly computable. This is supremo. How to get it? And but hopefully, at least for some domains, at least for convex domains, we have, first of all, of course, we have some versions of the Friedrichs inequality, which we can apply, assuming a bit more regularity. So this is what is written here about computability. So we want if we want to compute this term, to compute as integral, not as supremum, but as just integral, then we must restrict ourselves here. We must restrict it and say that this y star is in this space, and then we have this estimate, where this constant c omega is here, and then you see here you have just L infinity node. You may ask, if we restrict it like this, it may be happen that the true flux, which we suppose to approximate by this y star, will be not here, but hopefully it is not. True flux, true this p star, belongs to this set. So this restriction is not crucial. It is just for our technical convenience, and we can assume this without no real complications. This is not only in linear elasticity. This is in many other problems the same. So you have this. But moreover, hence the measurand will be expressed in terms of L1 norm. This quantity, which is directly computable, and this constant and safe load parameter. Of course, you must know safe load parameter. Moreover, we can do even better and extend to other boundary conditions if we apply Poincaré type inequalities in L1. There recently has been proved Poincaré type inequalities in terms of L1, and these estimates says you that if you have convex domains with piecewise smooth boundaries, then the constant in this Poincaré inequality is explicitly computable, and it is, to my mind, just diameter derived by 2 or by square root of 2, I do not remember, but it is explicit. So it is a bit different modification of this estimate, which is due to Poincaré inequalities, and then you have this result. And finally, I want to say that I decided not to discuss this paper in the lecture format. This technique, which is, of course, much more advanced, because Henke plasticity model is more complicated, much more complicated than this linear, this scalar volume problem. So it similar estimates, a posteriori estimates, has been done, and this is in this publication. Thank you for your attention.